Clyde. Thank you, Clyde. Thank you, Cerise. What a beautiful beginning to the morning. That's fun. I want to rock out again, though. I think maybe we should. Well, okay. We'll just start in the afterglow of it. That'll be it. That'll be enough for now. But oh my gosh, what a fun beginning to the day, and what a beautiful day. I have such an interesting message to deliver this morning. You may have noticed the title of the message is A Perfect Little Finger. And I generally begin my message with a quotation taken from something that has inspired me, and then I tell you about that, and that's how I jump in. And I thought, well, I better not do that today. You're going to be wondering what that means, a perfect little finger, because I actually found that as a quotation in the Raymond Charles Barker book that we are all reading together. And I am so excited, you know, to have this stewardship program and to get people looking at the same things. You know, the practitioners are praying every Sunday after service. They're going into my office and they're praying for the well-being of each individual connected to this community in any way, and also for the well-being of this spiritual center, that we might be that beautiful place that can grow in the future. And we're studying, as you heard, on Mondays in the afternoon and Tuesdays in the evening out of that Raymond Charles Barker book. So the first four chapters of the book is what we're all unifying in to look at. But I'm speaking from the back of the book. So today I'm looking at chapter 16, gorgeous chapter. The whole book is great. I mean, Dr. Barker is an important figure in the religious science movement in as much as he took religious science and made it well known on the East Coast. And he knew homes, and he's been around for a long time. But I notice when I read any of the books that he has published that they're really, they're law-based. They help me understand how spiritual law works, but they're really easy to understand because Barker had something very straightforward about his presentation. So I'm speaking today from the chapter called Limitless Opportunity. Chapter 16 is the book that I have focused my attention on. And when I sat down earlier in the week, the first line I typed on paper was, I've got something to say today. So before I even wrote the talk, I had this really strong call that there was something important that needed to be said in this message. So I'm going to start, and we'll give you the explanation as to how the title came, the perfect little finger. Dr. Barker speaks of an experience in chapter 16. He tells of an experience of a woman who was looking for help with a lot of problems that were going on in her life. And so she came to her practitioner or a spiritual counselor, and she said, I need some help, and here's what's going on in my life. Now, the practitioner, which a good practitioner, will just listen to you for a while before they start redirecting you or offering you guidance. So the practitioner is said to have listened for about 20 minutes as this woman went on and on and on about all the problems in her life. Now, she not only had some serious problems in the conditions of her life, but she was also experiencing some health challenges that apparently were rather severe. She had pain in pretty much every part of her body, and it was hard for her to function in life. So her practitioner listened to all of her sharing, and at some point said, okay, I think I have enough information. If you have a good practitioner, they'll do that gently. Sometimes if you're sitting with me, I don't do that so gently. I say, okay, enough, stop, let's move on now. let me ask you a couple questions now. So this practitioner said, okay, I'd like to stop right there. I think I have enough information. You've shared with me everything that's not going well in your life. So I want to teach you something. I want to try and experiment with you. I want you to take your right hand and just put it on the desk in front of you. And so she did what he said. And he said, now I want you just to look at your right hand. Just look at it. Just think about it for a while. And so she did. She was looking at her right hand. And he gave her some time. And then he said to her, what can you tell me that's right about your hand? What's good? What is okay about your hand? And so she thought about it. It was a surprising question, but because she didn't really feel good. She'd already shared that. But she looked at her hand, and he gave her enough time, and she said, well, my little finger doesn't hurt, was all she could come up with. My little finger doesn't hurt. And so the counselor said to her, all right, that's good. That's a great start. Now, I want you to rephrase that, and I'd like you to say it in a more positive way. So she thought about it, and she said, my little finger is perfect. Now we're getting somewhere. So the counselor is pleased with her comment and says to her, that's great. Now here's what I want you to do. I want you to go home today, and before you go to bed tonight, I want you to repeat 200 times, my little finger is perfect, thank God. Will you do that? And she said, well, I suppose I could do that, but I don't understand it. There's not really very much spiritual about my little finger. And so he said to her at that point, everything in the universe is spiritual, even your little finger. Now, the woman was thinking that there was some silliness to all this, except that she was able to respond and she was able to find something that she named perfect in her physical ailing body. That is a good place to start. But the lesson here is very valuable. It is to find something to praise and then praise it. So no matter what's going on in your life, no matter what kind of circumstances that you are walking through, look for something to praise. Look for something good. Look for something that is right. And then praise the bejavers out of it. Amen. Yes. Yes. So there is this law of life that we teach here in this community. It is a part of our teaching to look at these universal spiritual laws that we call spiritual principle. And the law, this particular law states that when we focus on what we do not want, our life cannot improve. If our attention is only on the negative, our experience can only be negative. And further, we get farther and farther from that which we do want to show up in our life, for that which we do desire to experience. So this is a spiritual principle about sowing and reaping. This is a spiritual principle about cause and effect. This is the idea that for every action, there is a reaction, and there is a consequence for the decisions and the ways we move through our very own lives. This is not to say a bad consequence, that we reap good things, or we sow good things in our, well, we reap and we sow. But if you do good, reap what you sow. So you want to reap the good results from your good choices or from the right action that you take. And when we open ourselves to be aware of something even more magnificent than that which is already in front of us, that which is already what we are experiencing in our life, then we begin to understand the expansive nature of life, that this spiritual principle, this universal law, is not a limiting thing in any way. In fact, Holmes often said, Ernest Holmes, the founder of the science of mind philosophy, often said that it is only our ignorance to the way the law works that limits us. When we can get a different perspective, we can see that everything is right before us to be claimed as ours. So we learn to understand that there is this creative nature in the way that life works. I like to say that there is that in the universe. If I look at nature, I can begin to understand that there is this givingness. And for me, it's easy to see that as the grace of God. But you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. There is an intelligence in this universe. There is an intelligence, a wisdom in our body that knows how to function and help us improve our health. But what we focus on is, well, as Clyde said so perfectly, is what we get more of. And so we want to be choosy about the consequences that we are setting up to experience in our own living. So as long as that woman, in the story I told at the beginning, as long as she focused on her aches and her pains and all the things that weren't working, her problems, then she was contemplating a negative physical condition, and your life will never get better if that's all we do is contemplate on the negative conditions in our life or in the world. Then that's all we're going to see. That's all that we'll be able to take in more of, and we're going to miss a whole lot of the grace of God that's spilling around us everywhere, waiting for us to notice and to catch. Now, I want to say that I think this gets a little slippery when we walk through world events, which we have all been forced to do this week. We have had a scary thing happen in France this week. And when we look at the world and when we look at things like acts of terrorism, we can feel extremely vulnerable. It is so easy for us to move into fear and begin to feel this need to isolate or protect ourselves, and then we miss the greater picture of what's going on. You see, there's things that happen not only in the world, but there are things in our own lives that unfold with a magnitude that feels comparable to that, and that we have choices all the time as to how we're gonna move through it, because we don't, for goodness sake, we don't want to get stuck in it. And I think when something happens in the world, there's this greater consciousness. You know, we talk about that. Ernest Holmes called it the consciousness of the human race. So there's just this unspoken consensus about how awful things are, and then it's a little harder to stand in your good if you're aligning with everybody else, just saying, yes, it's so horrible. Now, I am not saying that we should turn our back on this. I am not saying, I really thought long and hard about this. It's interesting that I wrote part of this before that incident happened. And I saw the wisdom of the way we are guided by Spirit to see what needs to be said. So I am not saying that we stick our head in the sand, we don't pay attention to what's going on in the world. What I'm saying is that we use this practical spirituality in every way in our lives. We can pray without ceasing. I'm going to tell you what I did, because I noticed that when I feel vulnerable and I feel afraid, I often don't experience it as fear. I'm more likely to get angry. And I'm more likely to notice that I'm angry and what I'm angry about. And doggone it, probably everybody here is a little bit angry over what's happened in France. And what I want to say is that our anger, and I'm sort of just personalizing this. This is not research. Well, this is a Karenism. It's definitely a Karenism. What I'm saying is that anger is easier for us than the fear, because it gives us a little sense of power. Now, if you look at what anger is a God-given gift to help us have a little more courage to do the things in life sometimes that have to be done by us that we don't really want to do. So typically in families, maybe it's about setting boundaries, right? Having healthy boundaries, being able as a parent to say no once in a while. To be able to say, no, I can't bake cookies for the bake sale at church. Thank you, Chris. Oh, my goodness, those were delicious. I'm not sure there's anything left. You have to talk to me about. Okay, those coconut things, crazy good. You have to help me make those. All right, so sometimes you have to say no. You know, I saw that we didn't have anybody to be upstairs with the children this morning, so I had to ask somebody, and the first person I went to said, yeah, not for me, thanks anyhow, but I'll help you find somebody. See, so that's healthy, that's setting healthy boundaries, and you know what? You don't have to get angry in order to set healthy boundaries, and I think that's really the gift in anger that we sometimes miss. But here, this is another story. When something happens in the world and I'm scared, my instinct is that they need to get the bad guy and they need to get rid of all the bad people, right? So if we let our anger play in our heads without supervision, then what happens is we begin to imagine things that are not very godly, either in why we need to protect ourselves or what we need to do to resolve this situation. And what I want you to know is that there is that in this universe that is greater than we are. It is absolutely present in all places at all times, and we can align to it. We can, Ernest Holmes used to say, we can use it. And so that's what I want to talk to you about today. How do you use it? So I was here at church helping, I wasn't helping. I was trying to work, and then I got busy gabbing with everybody and having a good time because there was a large number of people here Friday night setting up, and little by little, people kept telling me that what they heard on the radio while they were driving to church. So I'm disturbed by that. And I went home and I made a conscious choice. This is how I manage this stuff in my own life. I made a conscious choice, and most of you know I do not watch the news by choice. I'm choosy how I take the news into my life. I prefer to ask Hugh. He'll give me the cliff notes, and he knows how I like to hear it, but he keeps me honestly on top of things when I have missed something. But I went home and I turned on CNN and I watched it for about 25 minutes. And then I knew everything I needed to know. I didn't want just what people had been telling me. I wanted to sit with it. And I want to tell you that in those 25 minutes, I cried. And I felt the rage in me that this is not okay. This is a tremendous injustice. Innocent people should not be killed while they're out on a Friday night trying to have a good time. Every one of us knows this. And I sat with my sadness. I sat with that anger until I could soften it and recognize that I was just really sad and I was a little bit afraid. And you know what? I'm not afraid about what might happen to me. You know what frightens me is always how this will instill fear in the mass population and that we will not do the right thing because we're scared and we are justifying that there are things that reasons for us to not trust each other. And we need to trust each other more than ever. And so here's what I want to say to you. The fact that we could find a way to sit and to be sad, to be in it for a while, notice I didn't stay there, to feel my sadness, to give myself permission to cry about it, those are the things that soften us and stretch us so that we can love even more greatly than we have loved before. And that is what I believe compassion is. And the world needs compassion now more than anything else. Thank you. So we can't heal the world. What I realized, you know, I took the foundation class two times before I walked away knowing this. At the end of the second, and they used to be 13 weeks long, so I've had a lot of foundation class. What I walked away from knowing after I took the foundation class in the Science of Mind studies here, for the second time, I left knowing that I could not heal the world, but I did not have to feel powerless over what's going on in the world because I can heal my own mind. I can change my mind about what I think I see going on in the world, and I can align myself to spirit itself. I can stand in the presence of good, and I can believe in that powerful presence in life, and that the grace of God is showering on all of us even now. Now, that made me think, when I got to putting the message together, about Viktor Frankl. You know, what an extraordinary life that man lived. Viktor Frankl was imprisoned in the Nazi concentration camps. He was separated from his wife, and in fact, his wife was killed. He was a psychiatrist. And you know what he learned while he went through that experience and he lived to do something with it? How blessed is the world? What we learned was that he believed that what the difference between the people that survived that experience and did not survive that experience was that their ability to find meaning in life even in the concentration camps. He learned that he could give thanks for seeing the beauty in a little weed that cracked through the sidewalk. He learned that nobody could take away the beauty of the sunset in the sky. And he used all of that, and he went on to make a wonderful contribution in the realm of psychology and philosophy and spiritual study, certainly. Viktor Frankl said, these are his words, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. If you can't change it or it feels too big for you, you still have that ability to change yourself. In fact, it is the only thing we really have. And after he passed, someone wrote his biography, and this is what they said about Viktor Frankl there. He had a purpose that was nurtured by a circumstance. Wow. He had a purpose that was nurtured by a circumstance. So how do we find the perfect little finger in something so devastating as what's happening in the world? How can we look for a spark of good? How can we intend to see something good? And I would say that is the beginning. But Dr. Barker, in chapter 16 of the book we're reading? The Collected Wisdom of Dr. Raymond Charles Barker. Barker said, there has to be, I want to understand how she could find the perfect little finger. There has to be at least one point of good in order to heal any situation. Listen carefully. There has to be at least one point of good in order to heal any situation. Whether it is something going on in your life, in the life of a loved one, or in the world at large, it doesn't matter. If you can find one point of good, you have then become that point of light that can shine more light on a situation that can then expand by the grace of God. We are creative beings, my friends. We are creative beings living in a creative universe. We're all creating our own lives all the time. Some days it's good, some days it's not. But we are creating and creative, and we have been given this gift of being creative beings. So what would you like to create? You know, nobody is immune to the problems in the world. I mean, life is about growth and change, and therein lies every problem you could encounter. So if we don't move through our problems, then you have stopped right in the middle of it. If we don't appreciate the miraculous way that we always, always manage to get through to the other side of whatever it is that has unfolded, if we don't see and recognize and even name the miraculous way that happens, then we are missing the divinity of life in such a grand way. Sometimes in New Thought, we're quick to go to that place where everything is good, everything is all right, and we turn away. We want to be positive thinkers. We're proud of that, and we miss something beautiful. And so I wanted to say today that if we ignore our problems, if we throw our problems away and just discard our problems as if they are trash, they are not trash. It is a part of our lives. It is a part of how we grow, and it's a part of how the shape of our soul changes. So if we miss it, or we throw it away, or we pretend that it doesn't exist, then we are missing the lesson for growth at a very specific time in our life where it has been offered to us. If we do not value all of life, including our problems, including the difficult times, then we are missing not only the lesson, but we are missing the opportunity that lies right there so that you will be well prepared for what lies ahead. That's an interesting thought. Every situation is an opportunity for us to wake up even more to the presence of good on this planet, in this universe. Every time we go through something, everybody here knows this, every time you go through something, you have, when you get to the other side, something that you didn't have before. So the question is, can we be grateful? Now, if I had asked you that at the top of the message, I don't know how you would have answered. But now I'm inviting you to put some pieces of the puzzle together. I'm inviting you to begin to explore how you want to deal with what's in the news for the rest of the week. Just try it for a week. In fact, just try it for the next 6 days and see if anything we've said here today can be a temptation for you to look for something that is working, something to praise. Because when we praise it, we raise it. Now, we're in the middle of this stewardship campaign, and it's very exciting, and the numbers actually are really quite impressive. Thank you so much for taking it so seriously, and I can't wait to see what happens by next week. I think we're going to meet our goals easily. And by the way, that $150,000 is an expansion of all the monies that we project we will need. So it's not just what you tithe, it's all the income that will come to our center, but certainly the intentional giving program is the biggest part of that. So it's really exciting for all of us. But what I wanted to say was, and by the way, how much do I love you, Clyde, for not having to say all that in the message? Because I got something to say today. I want to say all that. Thank you for doing that for me. Every prosperity book I have ever put my nose in, and I got a whole shelf full of them, and there are a lot more than just my shelf full that have been published. Every prosperity author has written that before you can have increase, you have to be grateful for what you have. You must start by being grateful for what you already have, even if it doesn't look like much. You got to look for the perfect little finger in whatever way that exists in your own life. Well, sometimes to entertain myself, I watch televangelists so that I can be inspired too. I don't get to go to church on Sunday because I'm here. So sometimes I like to be inspired, and I heard this little twist on an old Bible story that I had never thought, it didn't ever resonate with me as important as it does this morning. So you know, there's this story in two of the gospel books. There are two different stories, made perhaps the same, but two different takes on the story of the loaves and the fishes. You know what I like about this story is you get to say fishes with two syllables because it's biblical, right? Right. So there's this great story of the five loaves and the fishes, and what happens is it's sort of the peak of Jesus's ministry. And so all these people are following him now. You know, he's got all these people that want to learn from the master. And this one day, they figure there were about 5,000 people that had gathered just to hear what this great teacher had to say that day. Now the 12 disciples get a little concerned at the end of the day, like, whoa, these people are going to be hungry. We haven't prepared for this. What should we do, Lord? Should we send them to the homes in the village? And Jesus says no, and he notices that there's a small boy who has five loaves and two fishes. Fishes. And so Jesus knows everything's going to be fine. He takes the food that is there, and notice what he does. This is so beautiful. Bible says Jesus took it and blessed it. The first thing he did was he gave thanks for that which was not enough. Wow. Think about that. The first thing he did was give thanks for that which is not enough. And I really stand in this truth strongly. I really believe this, that until we can give thanks or be thankful for that which seems to be not enough in our life, then what we have will never be enough. It'll never be that enoughness that we desire, right? So we start by looking for that perfect little finger for giving thanks for what is. But here's an interesting thing that I had never thought of quite this way before. He blessed it, and then he broke it. So he took what was not enough, and he began to break it apart, and the disciples began to pass it out, and it just kept multiplying, and there was certainly more than enough for everybody, But listen to this idea, and again, this was not my original idea. I heard somebody else say it, and I am excited about it. The blessing, what if the blessing is in the breaking? He gave thanks, but then he broke it. What if the blessing then comes sometimes from our brokenness? What if the way that we courageously align ourselves to the Holy Spirit or the truth or goodness, whatever you want to call it, that we trust that there is a power and a presence greater than we are in this universe, and we find the faith to stand in that power when we are feeling powerless, and know that we will come out on the other side, because that's the way life is. That's what we do. So I like that idea that we all have issues and difficulties and challenges and, yes, problems. You know me, I'm not shy about calling them problems. And sometimes we feel pretty broken. And maybe the most important thing we can do is bless that which does not appear so perfect. What I want to tell you is, and this is the whole point of my message today, is that the world looks pretty broken right now. Where will you stand? How will you manage your own sense of vulnerability? How will you deal with the sadness and the pain that you feel or that you don't want to feel? What the world needs now more than anything else is for us to bless it, for us to pray, for us to sit in silent meditation and stand in that truth that there is something bigger than this, and that on the other side of this, something better can show up. In fact, how else can this heal except through the brokenness of it? And so I think this is a perfect time for us to choose love, to align to truth in the way that we experience truth in any given moment. And I think that what I really came to do today was to offer you this bold invitation, to join me in knowing that there is this way, this how we can stand for truth by intending to see that which is good, intending to see that which is not broken, but not by turning our back on that which is, or at least it seems like it is. If we can be willing to look at it, to feel it, to stretch our ability to have compassion, we are stretching our ability to have compassion for each other and for ourselves. And that, my friends, is how the world will heal. Let us bless this world. Let us find something to praise. And let's just praise the bejavers out of that. I want to thank you for listening today, but right now I just want to anchor these ideas in the words of prayer. So I invite you just to get comfortable right where you're seated. And as we shift our attention away from the words spoken, and we turn within to just savor the few ideas that have nested within each and every soul this day. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is that presence, it is that power, it is all the activity of life. It is the truth that has come to be revealed. It is love. I sense that presence of love right here in this very room. And I sense the presence and power, the harmony of all the universe, the way in which we all come together to fit into a new configuration, to come together, to stand for truth, to be unified in love, to know and fully recognize the givingness of God, that flowing of grace. And as we open ourselves to be vessels to receive that grace, we allow ourselves to be filled, to be healed of all things that are unlike the perfection of who and what we truly are. We open ourselves to that holy guidance so that we might see that which is perfect. A perfect little finger becomes a miracle that moves mountains. And so I feel that power within me, and I stand in that place of recognizing there is something greater than we are that brings all things into being. I am grateful that we are indeed created in the image and the likeness of God itself, so that we are creative beings, so that this day we can intend to recognize beauty, life, and that we might courageously stand in love. And so we are blessing this planet right now by this immense praise. And as we bless the greater, those blessings show up in our very own experience of living. For what we focus on becomes what we are. So today we see love. Today we see healing. Today we see vitality and vibrancy in the human body, so that anything that ails us or a loved one is healed, so that we can sense there is a healing going on right now, and that our relationships are blessed with the outpouring of love, and we do not hold back. We let that love pour through us and from us, easing us into forgiveness wherever there has been a difficulty, and blessing our lives in glorious new ways. And so we stand strong this day in that glory, in that truth, in this place where God is. We recognize the indwelling God, and we know this is the healing of all that concerns us. I speak a special word of blessing this day for this planet and for all the lives that have been touched by the unfolding of events in France. I feel gratitude deep within me, resonating as a part of every molecule of my being. I am grateful to know that this is a way we bring healing to the planet, that this is a way we stand in our own prosperous well-being at the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. This is the way, and we are blessed with knowing how to do the walk. So I just say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life, for all of these blessings, for all that are yet to come. And I release these words into that divine law that can only say, yes, my child, yes. I let it be. And together we say, and so it is. Thank you.